Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So welcome to another edition of the Psychobetical podcast. This is a special edition called, well, I think I'm going to call it Higher Education. This is a midweek short little mini podcast, or a mini-sode, as my daughter would tell me. And I think I'm going to call it Higher Education. I had lots of good ideas from social media, from people telling me what to call it, but higher education is probably a good thing to call it. Not to be confused with anything to do with real education. So higher education sort of mini podcasts are going to be basically so Q&As, tips and advice about climbing and mountaineering, and hopefully be less waffly and random than the other things. So I'm sat here, I'm not actually walking for a change, I'm sat here overlooking the Persian Gulf. There's oil tankers going left and right, and anyway, that's all the randomness you're going to get. So I had a question from George on via Instagram. So he's got a cube, you know, love the podcast, blah, 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 all that kind of sucking up stuff. anyway, then he says, now this is going to be such a bone question that I could probably Google it. Must be American, don't know what a bone question is. But is it the most common practice to put a prussic below the ATC, like in a few of your pictures? I always put them above the ATC when I have bothered to use them. When underneath, would you do anything to stop you? Would they do anything to stop you wrapping off the end of your ropes? Also, any chance when the book is released? George is basically writing a book about abseiling. Basically not abseiling, but how to get down off mountains, rock faces, big walls and stuff, including walking, down climbing, abseiling, and all that kind of stuff. So I've been posting pictures on my Instagram from that book, just like, you know, dripping them out there. And so the issue of prussic loops, first of all, in the book I actually don't call them prussic loops, I call them like hitch cords, because I probably have to change it back to prussic loops. So the basically idea is the thing is, fundamentally, often you're not tying a prussic loop, and sometimes it's not a loop, it's a cord. So sometimes it's a sling, blah blah blah. So I basically tried to get away from the idea of a prussic loop, because it does seem to confuse some people. I'll explain why that is like a problem in a minute. So first of all, George, you should always use a backup. You should always use... So a backup is basically using a prussic loop as a third hand. So basically, if you let go of the rope, you're not going to die. Yes, use a prussic loop, use a backup all the time. Use it on a single pitch, on a multi-pitch. You have to get into the habit of always using one. And you have to get into the habit of not only using one, but to also sort of bullying everybody you're climbing with who doesn't use one, because it is just, it's kind of, it should be like standard operating procedure for climbing to use a prussic loop. Because if you hang it, if you, like I was talking to a friend of mine recently who had a really bad climbing accident, abseiling accident, and he said that after he had, after he'd survived, he basically fell, you know, 40 metres and somehow bounced off lots of things and survived. He said actually after he'd, you know, come out of hospital months later with a broken back and everything else, loads of people came up to him who were like really experienced climbers and told them that they'd had like abseiling accidents or near-death accidents. So there's a great deal of like underreporting in climbing. Basically, people like to cover up their stupid shit they do. Really, I was actually thinking of doing a weekly podcast called called Fuck Ups, basically, where I tell you all the fuck ups I've done in my own climbing as a way of sort of getting other people to talk about them more often. A lot of the accidents or near accidents I've heard about, I've seen, people have told me about, involve kind of losing control of the ropes. So the equivalent to everyday life is basically the seatbelt. Like when the seatbelt first was introduced, everyone was like, oh God, I don't need this. I remember like people were selling t-shirts with a black stripe across them so people could wear a t-shirt in the car and people would think they had a seatbelt on, which is kind of ridiculous really, because a seatbelt is a really, really good a good thing to have. They don't work if you go off a cliff and your car's rolling down the hill, you just fly out the window. But for a front-on collision, like a seatbelt is really, really handy. So with a seatbelt, like I can remember when people didn't have seatbelts, and you didn't have to wear a seatbelt on the back of the car and things. And if you travel around, like here where I live, people don't wear seatbelts. If you get in a taxi, often there's no seatbelts in the taxi, and it's kind of scary, like hurtling down the motorway, you know, like 70 miles an hour, and no one's got a seatbelt on, and the drivers here are pretty shocking. So, not having a seatbelt is a bit like not having a prussic loop. You want to get to the point where you've got so used to using a prussic loop, not only do you feel very, very exposed when you don't have a prussic loop on, which you are, but you also need to feel that when you see somebody else without a prussic loop on, that they're actually doing something sort of dangerous. Because it's not necessarily always about killing yourself. If you're at a crag and someone has an accident, or you have an accident, you are causing a great deal of distress, and you're causing a great deal of worry and trauma to people around you. And the mountain rescue teams and the helicopter and all this kind of stuff. So to just spend like 5 seconds putting a prussic loop on and taking a prussic loop off and learning how to use it properly and telling other people how to use it properly and just being a hard ass about it is probably the best investment in your time as a climber that you'll ever do. People spend like hours putting fingerboards up inside their house and never really using them. So invest the same amount of time in using a prussic loop. And full disclosure, I went years and years and years and years without using a prussic loop. And I, because I was from that generation where you didn't use a prussic loop, you sometimes tied a knot in the end of the rope. And the idea was that if you lost control, then the knots were going to stop you. But if you ever see someone falling, like 60 metres is a very, very long way. Like if you fall, if you lose control and you fall 60 metres, when you're bashing down the rock and, you know, probably like landing on the ground from 60 metres, you're either going to die or you're going to be smashed to pieces. So the idea that these knots on the end of a rope are there for anything other than to stop you from abseiling off the end of your rope, you know, that's what they're for. Some people in the past used to do stuff like wrap the rope around their leg and stuff like that. But if you're if a rock like smacks you on the head, you're generally going to end up sort of hanging upside down. The chances of that rope staying wrapped around your leg are kind of minimal, and it's just a pain in the arse, really. Like just put on a prusik. So invest in a prusik loop and use it, and tell everybody else to use a prusik loop. So, like in the book, there's probably like about 3,000 or 4,000 words just about prusik loops, how to use them, different knots, blah blah blah. So I'll keep it kind of simple. So the two primary, well, first of all, what prusik loop are you going to use? Now I use a prusik cord, which is a 70 centimeter length of 5 millimeter cord with 70 centimeters with two knots tied in the end. So one knot is quite small, the bite on the knot, it's just an overhand knot, it's with the bite, it's quite small, and the other one's a bit larger, and the larger one allows you to feed lark's foot the prusik into something else, and the other one's quite small. And when you're tying it with all prusik loops, you need to, once you've tied them, you want to like fully weight them, get them so they're really, really solid, so they can't come undone. I have seen people where their prusik loop actually came undone, so they were, you know, abseiling down, just letting the rope, you know, letting the prusik like hold them while they were doing something, taking their hands off, and the prusik loop actually came undone. So make sure it's like absolutely solid. So, you know, clipping something, weight it, make sure the knot's really solid. Also, make sure the tails of the knot are neither too long nor too short. Like if they're too long, they'll get sucked into the prusik knot, which will cause the prusik to jam or maybe even fail or something. So I like to have them probably like the width of your thumb or something. So quite small, but not so small that they're going to get sucked through. And like prusik loops tend to get better with age because they kind of soften up. But you don't want them. You don't keep them for forever. Like when they start like deteriorating a bit. And a 5 millimeter prusik loop, like a single strand of 5 millimeter, is probably good to about 400 kilos. So fine for the use in this kind of thing, but I wouldn't use it for anything else. It's not, it's like if it's a prusik loop, like a complete loop, it's probably good for like, you know, 600 kilos. So you might be able to get away with it as a thread or something, but not ideal. No, it's not ideal. And I also carry a VT prusik, which is actually 6.8 millimeter, like sort of Kevlar, aramid kind of super, super strong prusik, which is actually very, very quite thick and super strong. And I use that for, because basically if you're in a sort of a self-rescue-y sort of situation, your prusik loop might actually get called on to hold like quite a big load. Like if it snaps, you're probably going to die. So the best example is if you have a rope that's stuck and you only have one end, the end you're at, you're going to have to sort of prusik up the rope. And if the rope comes down, you're going to fall down onto that rope, because at the end of a rope should be attached to the belay. So you're climbing up this rope and you can do it on your prusik loops. And in that situation, you can't really... You have to have some sort of running belay. So you have to belay yourself, like you're almost like rope soloing up the rope. And you might have the rope might be clipped into you with a clove hitch, and you just keep adjusting the length of the clove hitch as you're jumarring up this rope on your prusik loops. But it's good to have a prusik loop which, if you do fall, it's going to invert and hopefully just be an extra thing that's going to stop you dying. So yes, having one really high strength prusik loop is a good idea, and then a more disposable sort of 5 millimeter. Like 5 millimeter is a good diameter. Like I climb on like super thin ropes at the moment, just because if you're doing like adventure-y stuff and you have to carry your gear, like, you know, a day or so into a route, then so I've got like Petzl, like super thin sort of Petzl ropes, which like seven and a half, seven something. So then and the other thing I have, I often carry a thing called like a rescue cord, which is like about 4 meters of 6 millimeter cord, and that's kind of in with my like cordlets and things, so that with the 6 mil cord you can use that to set up other kind of prussics for like self rescue or things. So that's your prussic loop out of the way. So the next two points are you going to have it in line or offline? So in line is the prussic loops attached to your harness from like the suspension point, which is going to be a belay loop, and it's like in line with your body. So like if it's called in to actually hold your body, it's going to hold your entire weight, and you're going to be suspended off it as if you were hanging on the rope, so you're completely safe. So offline is when you have it attached to your leg loop. And the leg loop method is very, very handy. Like, it's where your hand is naturally when you're abseiling, so it's very easy to push the rope down, stop it from locking up. But if it does get called on to work fully, so as in, if it's not just holding your body, it's not just holding the weight of you attached to your rappel device. Say you're abseiling and the rappel device became detached from your harness, so all you were hanging on was your prussic loop on your leg loop, then you're basically hanging upside down by your leg loop, which is not ideal. And there was actually a case of someone who ended up hanging by the leg loop, and their leg came out of the leg loop, so they were just hanging by one leg loop, hanging there in space, and they got rescued. So although it's probably the way I've abseiled the most, so just attaching to my leg loop, I have switched more over to like an inline sort of method. And in the book, I've got like a number of ways of using like an inline method for various different things. But to use an inline method, a big danger is that if your prussic loop gets sucked up into your belay device, it'll stop it from locking off. So you always have to have like a good distance between your belay device and the prussic. So the primary most well-known way is to use like an abseil sling or an abseil lanyard or a cow's tail, which means you extend your rappel device about 30 centimetres off from your belay loop by using a sling. So you basically lark's foot a sling in, tie a knot in the middle, clip your device into that, so it blocks it, and then at the end you have a carabiner that you clip in and out of, and there's various ways of setting up that sling, but that's kind of the most simplest way. And your prussic loop then attaches to your belay loop, so everything is in line, and you have a lot more control over your belay device. You can see your belay device, you're less likely to make a mistake putting it on, especially when you're wearing lots of clothes. And that is like the number one system that's worth using. So a lot of climbers, when they're climbing like single pitches, they're not going to want to do that. They don't want to get a sling out because they're abseiling down one or two pitches. So that's where like the leg loop system is kind of is good. The other way to do it is to carry, like I always carry like a 25 or 30 centimetre lock draw. Well, I carry two of them, which is just a quick draw with a locker, a really small locker on one end and a standard carabiner on the other one end. And that came about from climbing in like Tuolumne, where you might only have like one or two bolts on a whole pitch, so you didn't want the rope to come undone, so I would use that for clipping the rope in. And but anyway, that's really handy for extending your belay device for abseils, where you don't want to bother with a sling. So you just clip in the draw with the locker end into your quick draw, into your belay loop, and then you just clip your belay device into the other end of the draw, and just extends it out so you can have your prussic loop in line. On the subject of lockers, I'd always use a small, really small, like DMM Metolius locker for my prussic loops, because again, you don't want them to come unclipped, especially if you're like taking your hands off. On the subject of taking your hands off, I'm never that keen on taking my hands off. I see the rope as the prussic is like a soft lock. It's not like a totally solid hard lock, and sometimes they have failed, so they're just there as a sort of a fail safe. But if I'm going to stop properly, I'll always tie a knot in the rope so it locks into the prussic, or I'll wrap the rope around my leg, or I'll do something else. Sorry, some guy's going off on his motorbike. So the final point is above or below. Now, the above method, you see quite a lot of people, it seems to do with, like in Australia, I've seen a lot of people with the above method, also in America, in Europe, people use it, usually have it underneath the belay device. And the above method, the pros of it is the idea is that if you're abseiling and the ropes go through your hands, that the rope will be held by the top prussic loop. Like in reality, because you're pushing down with your hand on the top prussic loop to stop it from locking up, I think there's a good chance that you would just instinctively pull on the prussic and the rope would probably whiz through anyway. So I would never like think, I won't tie knots in the end of the rope. Sometimes you don't want to tie ends of the rope anyway, knots in the end of the rope. But if it's dark, you don't know where the ropes are going, you should always tie knots in the end of the rope or attach the end of the rope into your harness, which is a better system. So whether that's going to work or not, it's debatable. It's like in your head, that's a good idea, but in reality it might not work, because generally you tend to just end up pulling on the prussic and it would probably not lock up. Also, when it's above the device, you have the entire weight of your body on the prussic loop, where when it's below, you only have a small fraction of the weight. You only have depending on how thick the rope is, the amount of weight on the prussic is minimal when it's like below the device, but above it's like the entire weight. So if you make the mistake of using the wrong kind of prussic, so this is why I don't like using the word prussic, but I'm using it entirely the whole time. But a standard sort of classic prussic loop, if you fully weight it above a device, you're probably going to find it's almost impossible to undo. So you're going to have to. Like the first time I ever used a backup when I was a kid, I was like practicing and I abseiled off like an overhanging sort of cliff in Derbyshire, and halfway down I let the prussic loop, which is above my device, like lock up. Basically, it locked up completely and I was just stuck there. I didn't have a knife or anything, and I hung there for a very, very long time, and eventually I think I just did like a stood up in the rope and managed to release it, managed to abseil down. So if you're going to use a prussic loop above, you want to use a climb heist or an auto block doesn't really work very well above the device. An auto block is the best not to use probably. A VT prussic, I won't try and pronounce what it is, but a VT prussic is probably the best not to use, but you have to learn how to use it. The only time I tend to use a prussic above is if I'm passing a knot, because it's just easier, and then I'll tend to use a VT prussic, because a VT prussic, you can release it even when you're like fully weighting it, so you can almost like abseil down on a VT prussic without a belay device, but don't try that. Underneath, like if you have an inline system, or using an abseil sling, a lanyard or something, daisy chain, then that is by far the best method, because it will it will block, if you have knots tied in the rope, it will block them before they reach the device. Like if you have two knots stuck in your belay device with like an inch, 2 inches of rope, like you're pretty limited what you're going to be able to do with that. So, yeah, so below in line, that is the best way to do it. And but the number one thing is whatever way you do it, just do it. And also tell other people to do it and say that I told you that to do it. And it's, you know, as climbers, I don't know if anybody else saw, but I just saw the images of all the climbers who died this year, famous climbers. And there's like a hell of a lot of famous climbers who were not on that list. And so as climbers, we have to, like, I think we have to like step up a little bit. We have to like get our ass into gear and just work out some real, you know, safe working practices and try and tell other people to do it. Like if we were all skydiving, I guarantee that if people were like missing out things, people would get pissed off about it and tell them about it. So that's the end of this mini-sode. And I'm sorry there's people talking. And I hope you enjoyed it and be safe.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.